Dust settles from a massive government shakeup, and a court will decide whether to imprison opposition leader Alexei Navalny. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories we expect to make news this week. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFRL, and joining me here in the studio is senior RFRL editor Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Brian. Thanks.
So the first thing I think we'll be keeping an eye on this week is whether last week's shakeup of regional and federal elites was a one-off deal or the shape of things to come. In a single day last week, of course, four governors, four federal district chiefs, the head of Russia's customs service, and the ambassador to Ukraine were all replaced. Steve, what do you see happening here?
Well, I think there's probably at least two things going on with the shakeup. One is somewhat simple, attempt to get better results in the elections coming up next month. These regions where governors were replaced are in some cases ones where United Russia hasn't done well or is polling badly. And I think that fits into what I think you've spoken about on your podcast, an effort by Putin to clean up the elite in a way, at least. Getting rid of or moving out of important positions, people who are, possibly incompetent and corrupt.
Right.
So I think this is related to that, and also an effort by Putin to kind of consolidate power and get people he thinks he can trust into key positions ahead of the elections and just ahead of the whole election season going into 2018 when he may or may not run again.
Yeah, no, I think it's important to put this into context. I mean, the shakeup comes in the wake of a series of high-profile corruption cases against governors, against the investigative committee, and against the customs service. And as you say, the Russian media is suggesting also that it's just kind of just the beginning as the election season approaches, is the shape of things to come. I basically see three processes at work. I plan to write a blog on this week to unpack all of this. The first, as you noted, a partial purge of the elite does indeed appear to be underway. And as Mark Galeotti suggested on the podcast recently, that, as you said, Putin appears to be editing, so to speak, the social contract with the ruling class. You can still be corrupt within limits. You can still be incompetent as long as you don't embarrass the Kremlin, as Mark put it. But what you definitely can't be is both. And I think that we're seeing a bit of that. Another thing we're seeing is that being an old pal of Putin's is no longer gives you immunity. Vladimir Yakunin learned that the hard way last year when he was sacked as head of Russian railways. But Andrei Belyanenkov, also an old Putin crony, learned that when he was disgraced and sacked as head of the Federal Customs Service. And I'm also seeing reports in the media that Sechin is on the outs, increasingly on the outs in the Kremlin. Igor Sechin, the head of Rosneft, the CEO of Rosneft, of course.
There have been rumblings about that.
I think they
appeared and then sort of faded away, and now apparently they're back.
They're back, so. Yeah. So it's, and again, with what happened to Yakunin, I'm seeing in the media explicit comparisons made with Yakunin, which cannot be encouraging to Mr. Sechin at all.
And I think one thing to point out here maybe is that, with elections coming up and the presidential election eventually, Putin maybe feels that he does have to do something to form the appearance of tackling corruption or improving governance. If he's not going to do that in a real way in terms of reforms,
he's got to put on a good show.
Exactly. So.
So the other thing I see happen is this, again, as you noted, this trend of putting the Siloviki in charge of regions. It's not just Siloviki, though. It's a lot of Putin bodyguards. I talked about this on the Daily Vertical this morning. I mean, we saw Alexei Dumin put in charge of the Tula region earlier in the year. But one of the names that popped out at me was Yevgeny Zinichev, the new head of the Kaliningrad region. Now, he was moved directly from being head of the FSB in the Kaliningrad region, but before that, he was Putin's bodyguard. Here a bodyguard, there a bodyguard, everywhere a bodyguard, bodyguard. It seems like we're seeing this. It's obviously an effort to head off unrest ahead as the economy weakens, the election season approaches. Remember, last year we had that task force sent out from the Federal Protection Service to monitor the regions, unrest in the region. So we're seeing that's an obvious trend. The third thing I see, and I think this might be the most interesting, though, is that within this atmosphere, there's intense jockeying among the security services to gain advantage. And the FSB appears to be winning, but not just the FSB, a particular department of the FSB, the FSB's Economic Security Services, which spearheaded all these corruption investigations, the corruption investigation against the governors, the investigative committee, the Federal Customs Service. Now, the Economic Security Service of the FSB is the part of the FSB that's in charge of monitoring the oligarchs, so to speak.
Right.
It's the more very lucrative part of the FSB. It was recently part of a power struggle, which, according to reports I'm seeing in the media, was won by an ally of Viktor Zolotov, another Putin former bodyguard who now heads the 400,000 strong National Guard. So that, there's a lot of moving parts in this story, and I'm really going to try to unpack it all in a blog this week. But we'll be keeping an eye on it. I agree with you. I think we're going to see more and more of this. Another story I'm watching this week, Alexei Navalny's due back in court as Russia's Federal Penitentiary Service is asking that the opposition leader be given a real prison term instead of a suspended sentence in the Yves Rocher fraud case, that case from a couple of years back that was widely and I think correctly seen as politically motivated. I can't help but wonder if this time they really might just put him away. What do you think, Steve?
No, I mean, you know, I'm tempted, of course, to say, who knows what Putin will do? But I mean, I'm going to say I don't think they will. There's been this sort of threat before. He's had other, you know, obviously the first time when he was sentenced to prison and then freed. I mean, I think what Putin has shown both domestically and in foreign policy in Ukraine, he does as much as he can. And then he stops. So I think, you know, he's thinking, can I do this? And, you know, up till now, the answer has been, no, I'd probably better not. And I don't see a major change in sort of the situation objectively that would make him change his mind. On the other hand, I am going to put a little caveat in there. And I think that Putin, you know, he's known for being pragmatic, but I think he's maybe 90% pragmatic or something like that.
10% vindictive.
10% emotional, vindictive. You know, I think there's things he's done that have gone outside the boundaries of pragmatism. So, you know, that's also something to look at. And, you know, it's possible that anything happened, but.
Yeah, I mean, again, as you mentioned, when they tried to do this back in the summer of 2013, it resulted in massive street disturbances in Moscow and resulted, of course, the next morning with Navalny being released and was a bizarre turn of events.
Right. I mean, it's
possible.
But
these are different times. These are different times than that. The summer 2013 was pre-Crimea annexation. Putin was on the ropes kind of then.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it is possible that they could try to show that Putin and those around him could try to sort of make a definitive statement here and show, look, we won't tolerate anything and this is how it's going to be for the next few years. So that, you know, that is certainly something to think about.
Another thing that's given me pause, though, is the Duma elections are approaching and the Kremlin no doubt remembers how Navalny stole the narrative back in the 2011 Duma elections, branding the United Russia Party the party of swindlers and thieves, persuading opposition-minded people to vote for anybody but United Russia to deny them a majority, and then leading the protests after they are not interested in a repeat performance of that, and they might just make sure it doesn't happen.
No, and especially, I mean, if you consider Navalny at the time, you know, he did emerge as the leader, but he was one of several people who kind of drove the protest.
That's when he came into his own.
And now he's pretty much the only one left, with Nemtsov having been killed.
Nemtsov in prison.
Exactly. It's a different situation. So they may think, okay, let's get rid of this last.
Yeah, no, I'm watching this one closely because I think you're probably right, but I'd hedge a little bit more and say they might just put him away. In any event, that's all we got time for today. You've been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories making news in Russia. We do this every Monday, so be sure to tune in. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical Podcast. Joining me has been senior RFERL editor Steve Gutterman. Join us again next week. And now, as always, I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.